The news coming out of the Middle East is seldom comforting, especially when it involves Syria. The civil war there may be winding down, but it's gone on for nearly 8 years. Bashar al-Assad is still in power, and hundreds of thousands of people have died. An Ashland author writes about the human effects of the Syrian civil war, but in a new work of fiction. Michael Nieman is a Southern Oregon University professor of international studies and an author. He continues his tales of the character Valentin Vermeulen in the novel No Right Way, the fourth novel with the character. And Michael Nieman's back in the studio with me. Good to see you once again.
Well, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
So is the writing of fiction a way to deal with international relations, international events in a way that you can control a bit more?
Yes, that's the short answer. My career in academia has basically been trying to make complicated things understandable for my students and for myself, really. And I think writing fiction is just another way of doing that.
So you thank the Monday Mayhem writing group in your books always. Tell us about that group.
Well, the group originated with a local author, Tim Woolforth, who started it 11, 12 years ago. He did a crime fiction writing workshop at the Ashland Library, and several people approached him afterwards and says, can we continue this? And when I moved to the Valley in 2008, I heard about this. I hadn't really, I'd sort of dabbled in fiction. I'd taken a fiction writing course from colleagues of mine out on the East Coast where I used to work. And I asked if I could join. And I said, well, have you written anything? And I had a fragment of what later would become a story. And I gave it to him. And he said, I like it. Why don't you try us out? And so I've been with that group ever since. We meet every other Monday. It's a critique group, which means on the Thursday before that Monday, we submit up to 20 pages. We are supposed to read everybody's submission, and on the Monday we meet, we just critique each other's writing.
How well do you take the critiquing? I wonder if it's a cringing thing or if it's like, okay, come on, bring it on, let's hear it.
I think we've been together now long enough that we trust each other. And so when I say, I don't really think that works, what you just did, they know that I'm not being mean. They know that that's a criticism that they might take into consideration. I take that criticism as well because we're all writing different kinds of crime fiction. And so it's good to have other eyes on it.
So let's talk about Valentin Vermeulen. This is not like Bond, a James Bond. Valentin Vermeulen doesn't come out quite the same way.
No, but it's not.
He's got some chops as a guy who knows the law, but that's not completely about what he's about at the moment in his current job, right?
No, he works for a relatively small office of the United Nations called the Office of Internal Oversight Services. And that office was created in 1994, partially in response to U.S. pressure because they were always complaining about the U.N. wasting taxpayer money.
So it is a real office.
It is a real office, yeah. And so their job is to investigate fraud throughout the United Nations system. In other words, make sure that the money that is spent by the United Nations, and we're talking about several billion dollars a year, that it's spent according to the purposes for which it was allocated. Whenever there's money going someplace, there's always somebody trying to figure out how to have some of that money end up in their own pocket, right?
So this obviously is going to put Vermeulen into the lap of people who are, corruption,
exactly.
Murder,
yeah.
All that sort of stuff. This is the fourth Valentin Vermeulen. I understand you've already written number five, is that right?
Yes, I just mailed the manuscript to the publisher,
okay.
Right?
I won't get ahead of us, though. Let's talk about this one, number four. No Right Way. What does the title refer to?
It comes from a Turkish proverb, and I think it's a proverb that is around the world in one way or another. And the complete proverb is there's no right way to do the wrong thing. And the crime boss that features in this particular novel says this at one point. And I thought, oh, that sort of would be a good title.
I wonder also if it refers possibly to the United States foreign policy approach to Syria, because it's been talked about for many years. There's no good way for us to get involved there.
I wasn't thinking about that, but now that you mention it, yeah, it probably is a fitting description. It is a really complex way, and I think the U.S. approach to this problem was kind of bungled from the very beginning of it. There was this idea that similar to Iraq, that the dictator had to go without the understanding that the dictator sort of held that country together in the same way in which Saddam Hussein held Iraq together. Not in a positive way, but the absence of that central force leads them to all kinds of other groups claiming territory, claiming control, and so forth. And then that's what happened in Syria as well. You had multiple factions fighting against each other, some supported by Turkey, some supported by Iran, some supported by the Arab Peninsula, Emirates, and so forth. Saudi Arabia, quite active there as well. And out of that comes something like ISIS.
Michael Nieman, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a professor of international studies at Southern Oregon University and the author of now four works of fiction dealing with the character Valentin Vermeulen. The latest is called No Right Way. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. Questions, comments, welcome at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Do you find yourself having to pull back sometimes to take some of the international studies brain out of the thing to make sure that you get a good story?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it took me a while to get to that point. It's easy to fall into the lecture mode, but of course, people read fiction first and foremost for a good story, and so to keep that story foremost is the most important part. So, yes, they are tidbits of information kind of thrown in, but there are sort of creative ways you can do that.
And bigger than tidbits in some cases, because you know, you're dealing with a Syrian refugee camp in Turkey is the primary focus of the book, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I did my research about this, but there are sort of tools in fiction that allow you to bring in information. I mean, the big thing in our writing group is always, that's just a fact dump. Nobody wants to read a fact dump, right? And that's usually exposition. But if you use dialogue in an interesting fashion, you can get information in through the actions of the characters.
Let's take a call here. We have Alan Eugene, who often calls about international relations matters. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange, this time with Michael Nieman. Al, go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah.
This is Al from Eugene.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. You know, I have two comments. Your guest alluded to Iraq and Syria, so I would like to make comments of both. In Iraq, the reason the Iraq invasion failed, first of all, it wasn't prepared for, and secondly, hurrying to make to have an election, and the demand of Iran to dissolve the Iraqi army. It's always said it's Bremer who did it, but actually it was the demand of Iran, because what happened is after the collapse of the Iraqi army, or after the defeat of Saddam in a way, the Iran sent all its militia that they were just on the other side of the border.
Okay, I think Michael has some thoughts on that, but let's talk about Syria. Al, move on to Syria, please.
Okay, well, with regard to Syria, there were two things. You know, the red line that Obama did, and if you look closely, because of Obama's idea of having this Iraq deal, this nuclear deal, the demand of Iran that there was... That the United States doesn't do anything in Syria, and then they have advisors, be it Ben Ross or Kerry or Fareed Zakaria, who is in many ways actually a representative of Iran.
Okay, I'm going to cut you off there because we're going to run short on time here, and I can see Michael seeming to have some discomfort with the idea that Iran is as involved as you're portraying, Al. But go ahead, Michael.
Well, I mean, obviously, Iran is a player both in Iraq and in Syria, as there's a jockeying over, you know, who is the dominant power in the Middle East, and it's ultimately a conflict between Saudi Arabia and Iran. Ultimately, the U.S., of course, having thrown in its lot with Saudi Arabia, and so therefore, it's a one-sided approach. I agree with the caller that Obama's red line was a terrible mistake, because once you make that statement and then you don't follow up, you basically you just showed your cards.
Yeah, and there was no penalty once the red line was crossed. So, yeah.
And it turns out that the rise of ISIS really was sort of the Emirates and Saudi Arabia who, not directly through the government, but there are enough billionaires on that island that fund money to those causes to counteract the Turkey/Iran/ effect there. But the result of it all was that it looked to the outsider as this incredible morass. And the trouble is that to settle that kind of a conflict, you have to get all parties at the table. And by saying, for example, that Assad could not possibly be part of that solution, there was absolutely no incentive for Assad to even negotiate.
Do we ever see Assad, for example, in your novel?
No.
Everything happens at the edge of that universe.
Everything that happens in the novel happens in Turkey. Mm-hmm. And Turkey has played sort of a very ambiguous role there as well. At one point, there were weapons deliveries that went through Turkey, and it was not clear where they were headed, possibly to ISIS. Turkey is a recipient of all kinds of smuggling, which kind of is also covered in the novel. There's oil smuggled. ISIS smuggled oil across the border into Turkey and so forth. So there were all kinds of ways in which President Erdogan and the Turkish government just played a very ambiguous role in this conflict.
Michael Niemann, mm-hmm. again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a professor of international studies at Southern Oregon University, obviously well-versed in the affairs of the mm-hmm. world, and writes about them in a fictional context in his Valentin Vermeulen thrillers. His latest, number 4 in the series, is called No Right Way. Let's talk about some of the side characters here. Yassim mm-hmm. Yasser is a very interesting character of her time and place, and yet not having some of it.
Yeah. She is part of the criminal network. She is working her way up. She's sort of the heir designate of a particular crime boss. But she also has her own demons to fight and certainly is not enamored with her uncle, who is trying to foster her in a way.
I guess we don't. Now that we know that she's involved with her uncle, we don't need to talk about why she's trying to bury a body in the very first sentence of the book.
So. Right. Well, she's running her own little scheme. She is running a scheme in this book, and the body that she buries on the very first page is somebody who found out about the scheme, and so it needed to be removed. It's an interesting idea. There's been this discussion about the role of women in crime fiction, and for the majority of time, women were the victims. You know, the dead girl novel is terrible trope because the dead girl novel is never really about the girl. It's always about somebody else, and the girl is just the occasion. And so I remember reading an article, we need more terrible women in crime fiction. And so, yes, she is a criminal and she acts out her criminality in this particular novel.
And we also have Rima Ahmadi. This is also a woman resistant to the norms of her culture. How does she figure in the story?
She is one of the refugees who arrives in this southern Turkish town rather late because she was an elementary school teacher in a smallish town, and the Civil War kind of spared that town for quite some time until it didn't. And her family got killed, and she sees no other option than to go to Turkey, and she finds herself an educated woman, single, in a context where single educated women don't have a space. And so she struggles with that, ends up picking grapes, which is, one of the ways in which many of the refugees end up in Turkey. And Turkey has the largest number. There are 3.5 million refugees in Turkey. And most of them are from Syria, not all of them. So Turkey is right now the host for the largest, single largest number of refugees. And so some of them are well taken care of in official Turkish refugee camps, but the majority, almost 90%, just kind of filter into society and almost inevitably get exploited. There are sweatshops that are run with Syrian refugees, there are agricultural work, et cetera, et cetera. And she finds herself in one of those positions.
It's interesting that even though you avoid the situation you referred to as the fact dump, where you're just putting a lot of exposition in there, you are able to tell through stories like Rima's story of just narrowly missing death herself, the horrible things that happened to her family, reminded of things that have happened in the Syrian civil war, like the white helmets and the attacks on them and all of this. And I wonder how cathartic it is for you to be able to write about people who are not real but faced situations that certainly were real to lots of people in that part of the world.
Well, it's, for me, in a strange sense, an exercise in empathy, trying to imagine what that must be like. Because I've been dealing with teaching and writing about international things now for over 30 years. And I've lived very much a protected life, if you will. I mean, I've lived that sort of white male privilege all the way. And there are enough talking heads on the various news channels about
that. You're happy
that.
Not being a pundit.
I don't want to do that. I think that's one of the worst ways in which expertise can be used. But at the same time, I do want to tell these stories in a way that people don't necessarily pay attention to that, get a little bit of a feel.
So if people have really gotten enamored of Valentin Vermeulen through the previous three books, any particular surprises for him in this one? I can assume he lives because it's a fifth book.
Yes, he will survive, of course, with a serious character. We kind of know that until, of course, it does not happen. Who knows? That might still come. I think he faces different kinds of challenges. In previous books, the kind of challenges he faces were much more connected to the United Nations. Here they are, in a way, connected to the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees representatives, but really falling into the context of organized crime in a way that he did not expect.
So I understand book five, you've already, can you tell us anything about this one?
The fifth book is sort of a flashback book. We finally learn more about his previous life, about the kinds of things that made him who he is. He gets called back to Antwerp, where he used to be a prosecutor, because there were irregularities in an old case, and he's being interviewed by the police, and it turns out that before long he realizes that he is being framed for something that he didn't do.
So. All right, so that'll be the fifth book. Does it have a title yet?
No.
All right, so that is the fifth.
Actually, no, it does have a title. Okay. Sorry, it's called Percentages of Guilt, which is the working title.
Okay, Percentages of Guilt. And then the one that's out now is called No Right Way by Michael Nieman. Do you have any events coming up to talk about the book?
Yes, there will be a reading at Bloomsbury on May 23rd at 7 p.m.
May 23, 7 p.m. at Bloomsbury Books in Ashland. The book is called No Right Way. It's the latest, the fourth of the Valentin Vermeulen thrillers from Michael Nieman, who is a professor of international studies at Southern Oregon University and the author. Michael, always good to see you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Nice to be here again. Thank you.